Call has been covering the climate crisis and related issues at least once a week since the 2016 election, and we regularly receive emails from listeners asking, what can we do? A groundbreaking report published in Science in 2018 says avoiding meat and dairy is the single biggest way to reduce your impact on the earth. Activists say there's still time to take action, but we must act swiftly and motivate millions of people around the globe. On June 1st, activists will be discussing these issues at the Compassionate Eating Conference in Novato, California. Join us after the news. Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. The Guardian's environment reporter Damian Carrington recently asked 380 top climate scientists what they felt about the future. They said they're terrified, but determined to keep fighting. Climate scientist Ruth Carrizo Mota said sometimes it's almost impossible not to feel hopeless and broken. After all the flooding, fires, and droughts of the last 3 years worldwide, all related to climate change, and after the fury of Hurricane Otis in Mexico, my country, I really thought governments were ready to listen to the science and to act in the people's best interest. She expects the world to heat by a catastrophic 3 degrees Celsius this century, soaring past the internationally agreed 1.5 degrees Celsius target and delivering enormous suffering to billions of people. She says this is her optimistic view. Of the 380 climate scientists Damian Carrington interviewed, 77% believe global temperatures will reach at least 2.5 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels, a devastating degree of heating. Almost half think it'll be more than 3 degrees Celsius, and just 6% think the 1.5 degrees Celsius limit will be achieved. We have been covering the climate crisis and related issues at least once a week on this show since the 2016 election, and we regularly receive emails from listeners asking, what can we do? What is most effective? Well, a groundbreaking report published in Science in 2018 says avoiding meat and dairy is the single biggest way to reduce your impact on the earth. The study was led by Joseph Poor at the University of Oxford. It found that while meat and dairy provide just 18% of calories and 37% of protein, it uses the vast majority of farmland, 83%, and produces 60% of agriculture's greenhouse gas emissions. Joseph Poor says a vegan diet is probably the single biggest way to reduce your impact on planet Earth, not just greenhouse gases, but global acidification, land use, and water use. It is far bigger than cutting down on your flights or buying an electric car. Activists say there's still time to take action, but we must act swiftly and motivate millions of people around the globe. On June 1st at 1 p.m., activists will be discussing these issues at the Compassionate Eating Conference at the Marin Humane Auditorium in Novato, California. You can find more information at yourcallradio.org. Today, we're joined by two of the speakers at the Compassionate Eating Conference. Hope Bohannock is Executive Director of Compassionate Living, an organization working to end farmed animal suffering. She's the author of the new book, The Humane Hoax, Essays Exposing the Myth of Happy Meat, Humane Dairy, and Ethical Eggs, and The Ultimate Betrayal, Is There Happy Meat? Hope Bohannock also hosts the Hope for the Animals podcast. Hi, Hope. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, Rose. Thanks so much for having me.
It's great to have you. Lauren Ornelas is founder of the Food Empowerment Project, an organization that seeks to create a more just and sustainable world by recognizing the power of one's food choices. The Food Empowerment Project encourages healthy food choices that reflect a more compassionate society by spotlighting the abuse of animals on farms, the depletion of natural resources, unfair working conditions for produce workers, and the unavailability of healthy foods in low-income areas. They just started their annual school supply drive for the children of farm workers. Backpacks will be filled with school supplies and they'll go to farm workers in the central coast of California who pick our strawberries, blueberries, raspberries, blackberries, and vegetables. You can go to Your Call Radio for more information. Hi, Lauren. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Well, Hope, let's start off with you because we've been talking about these issues for many, many years, but we have found that so many guests that talk about the environment and climate change do not really talk about meat and dairy. Now, that has definitely changed in the past couple of years because there's so much new research out there. But given that you've been doing this work for a long time, can you just talk about some of the changes that you have seen when it comes to just being honest about the effects of big ag?
Sure. Yeah. And I'll agree with you that I think that the media, mainstream media, has been much better about talking about the larger climate change picture and climate disruption. And that's great. I'm glad to see that. Unfortunately, what doesn't get talked about is the animal agriculture connection and how much impact animal agriculture has on climate disruption and just the larger environmental issues. Just the EPA alone talks about, there's numerous studies that, you know, talk about environmental degradation from animal agriculture, massive energy consumption, deforestation, loss of biodiversity and habitat and species, excessive water use and pollution. There's so much that is encompassed in animal agriculture's impact. And, you know, and so often we think, well, what can we do about it? And unfortunately, the animal agriculture industry, they are offering some solutions in sustainable labels and a kind of, a more environmental approach to producing animal foods in greenwashing. And we're hearing this term a lot more now, greenwashing, and it certainly is prevalent in animal agriculture and animal products. And, you know, unfortunately, the environmental impact is really not impacted that much with these greenwashed labels. And these labels are woefully unregulated. You won't know really the difference from one farm to another because of the websites and their marketing being so, covering up the truth. And just considering the size of the farm, I'd like to mention that too. People often think, you know, smaller farms are going to be better for the environment and, that smaller farms are better. But smaller farms really don't alter the resources required to raise and transport and slaughter billions of animals. I mean, right now, 55% of our fresh water is given to animals raised for food. That's not going to change just because it's a small farm. We still have, you know, the billions of farmed animals to raise, and we're wasting tons of resources and water and causing the pollution. And just because there's a sustainable label also doesn't necessarily mean that it's from a small farm. The larger farms, the industrial farms, are using these labels as well. So, when we look at labels like local, this is a label that is very popular. People automatically assume when they see a local label that means that the food's carbon footprint is going to be less, right? But when you really break it down, the transportation of a food product is about 11% of the impact when these studies are done on the life cycle assessment and calculating the impact of the food. The production phase is what is really impactful. 83% is the production phase, and that is the animal products. Animal products are heavy on production. There is lighting, heating, the mechanized processes like milking and refrigeration and the slaughter process. All of that is massive energy consumption, right, compared to growing plants, which is much more energy efficient, much less wasteful. So there's a lot to it. And I encourage people to really dig into those labels that they're seeing and not be fooled by greenwashing. If it's an animal product, just inherently, it is going to be more impactful environmentally.
And we'll definitely talk about this during today's show because you've written two books about this. But since you brought this up from the start, I want to give out the phone number because I'm sure a lot of people have questions about the labels. I mean, on Sun Foods these days, there's at least five different logos, lots of labels. And in many cases, for some people, it's hard to figure out what is truthful. So if you have any questions about the labels that you see on food, words like ethical, things like that, we'd love to hear from you. And then what are your thoughts overall about what the science now shows that if you have choices, and I think, and I'd love to talk to Hope and Lauren about this, if you have choices, avoiding meat and dairy is the single biggest way to reduce your impact on the earth. And Lauren and her team at the Food Empowerment Project do so much work in neighborhoods where healthy food is not available. So we're definitely going to talk about that. We know this issue is not black and white. You can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. Lauren, before we talk about that aspect of the work you all do at the Food Empowerment Project, you also have been doing this work for a long time. What are your thoughts about how the conversation around these issues has or has not changed? Because as Hope said, there's more media coverage about the climate crisis, thankfully, than ever before. But the big ag, meat and dairy angle still is not getting the attention it deserves. How do you see it?
Great question. I think the main thing is we have to look at who are we hearing from, right? What I'm noticing that young people far get this better than, say, people in my generation. They understand. They are living with the burden of knowing quite their reality and their futures, how tied they are in with the climate crisis. And I feel when you listen to them, you're hearing the truth. You're hearing them willing to make sacrifices and changes in their lives in a variety of ways, not even just related to food, but in a search for collective justice, that they're willing to put so much on the line for that. Whereas I think people in my generation tend to be unwilling to make these types of changes, unwilling to just believe science. And this is when I would say to people who are in my generation, I mean, we haven't heard anything about eating more plants being bad for the environment and not even being bad for your health. So what will it take if it's not your children or your grandchildren or your great-grandchildren to make these changes in your life? In order for them to have a future. So what I'm seeing is the past and people being resistant to changing their eating habits, thinking past themselves to where we are now with generations who are willing to make changes to improve their lives and the lives of human and non-human animals across the globe, as well as the planet.
Lauren, for people who might not be familiar with young people and the activism they're doing around food and these related issues, can you just fill us in? What is happening out there that you think deserves more attention?
Well, I think that, well, first of all, I don't think these young people need an explanation to how all these things are connected. Many of them don't seem to need to hear that when you feed animals a lot of food, when animals excrete a lot of waste, when animals are given a lot of water, that takes away from the planet. They seem to understand that these issues are connected, and their willingness to make changes in their own lives to improve the world around them, I think, is vastly different. I think that, you know, I give a lot of talks, and a lot of the young people, they are, what is prime on their mind is, what can I do instead of how can I fight change? And so I think that what we're not hearing enough from the young people. We actually have an amazing youth coordinator at Food Empowerment Project who's doing a lot right now. And I'll tell you, these young people, they get it. And they see it being more about protecting the planet and non-human animals than I have seen in previous generations. And so I think we need to see more of that. It's not like we need to look at young people as the future. They are the here and now, and they're making changes in our world right now that are so positive that we need to not be looking at them in just a futuristic way, but listening to them and looking at them as leaders of today.
Hope, would you like to add anything about what you're hearing from young people? Because you're out in the public a lot, giving talks at conferences across the country.
Yeah, it's really heartening to hear what Lauren is saying, because I think that she's right. And the young people get that these issues are all very connected, and it's not just in a silo, one issue or the other, that it's important to make these connections across the board, that these are systematic issues and one affects the other. And I think Lauren's correct that the older generation, we don't really see it that way or get that. And it's really heartening to see young people understanding those deep connections, and that we have to look at this holistically, to make any true change.
And also the fact that we just don't have time. I mean, it's not like we can say, all right, we've got a couple decades here to work on this issue. I mean, we've had so many scientists on who say we need to make major change by 2030 and then 2040 and net zero by 2050. But, you know, 2030 is right around the corner. So can you also talk, Hope, about just what you're hearing from other activists in this movement about what's most effective to let people know that we need to make these changes now? I mean, activists say that we've got some time, but we have to reach millions of people around the globe, especially if, who knows what's going to happen in the November election, but if politicians refuse to act on this, I mean, obviously we need government change first and foremost, but when we don't have it collectively, what we all do is really, really important. We're not talking about just individual action, but we're talking about the collective action.
Yeah. Well, that's the million-dollar question, huh? How to get this information out there. And we're all doing our best to do that. But it is critical. And when you're talking about the environmental impact and climate disruption, yeah, there's a ticking clock. And it is very, very important. But what's exciting to me about this connection, the environmental connection with animal agriculture and our food consumption and meat, dairy, and eggs, the exciting part of that is that if we could get people on board, if we could get people to understand that reducing or eliminating animal products, meat, dairy, and eggs, there's such a huge impact there. And it would be so much less. So for instance, when we look at the energy sector, and changing over to renewables, say, you know, and getting the grids all on renewable energy and things like that, that takes time. It takes infrastructure change and government involvement and lots of money, billions of dollars, you know. So that is this slow moving, very hard ship to turn. But when you look at global shift to a plant-based diet, all it would take is people making different choices at the grocery store. You know, the majority of people in more privileged in Western areas making big, you know, changes in their diet, that could have such an amazing impact. And all it is people just having the will to do it, right? And the information and making those choices at the grocery store. So this is a way that we could make big change fast. And that's what's exciting about it and why I feel that it's critical to focus on.
And Lauren, at the Food Empowerment Project, you all focus on the unavailability of healthy foods in low-income areas. So you're not all shouting, you know, stop eating meat and dairy. And if you don't have access, well, do it anyway. I mean, that's not, like I said, it's not black and white. So can you talk about how your group talks about these issues, especially when you're thinking about people who might not have access to healthy food in their neighborhoods?
Absolutely. I mean, one of the things we do at Food Empowerment Project is to also highlight How many of us of different cultures can celebrate our comfort foods and eat them and still be vegan. Mm-hmm. So we have resources. I'm Mexican, so we have vegan Mexican food in English and in Spanish. We have vegan Filipino food in English and Tagalog, vegan Chinese food, vegan Lao food in the respective languages as well. And we're coming out soon with vegan soul food. And this is a way to highlight and to celebrate and to show people that you can be vegan. And you don't give up your identity and you don't give up culture. What you give up is the suffering of non-human animals. But for those communities that don't have access to healthy foods, you know, this is when we ask vegans to put the brakes on. It's easy to be vegan because it's not easy for everybody to be vegan. And injustices are taking place in communities all around us where Black, Brown, Indigenous, immigrant communities don't have the same access to healthy foods as other communities do. And so what we do is really to want to try to, you know, figure out how to stop this injustice from taking place. So in the Bay Area, we've looked at Santa Clara County. We've also looked at Vallejo and looked at the fact that these communities not only lack non-dairy milks, but they even lack fresh fruits and fresh vegetables. And it's very hard for somebody to be able to go vegan when they can't even access fruits and vegetables. So our work is to really try to prove that the problem exists with reports, do focus groups in communities to determine what their needs are. We always compensate people for their time. Again, we do not go into communities where we are not asked to. We follow environmental justice principles and go in where we're asked. And we try to work with them on access to healthy foods. Currently, we've been working in Vallejo for a while about trying to get a worker-owned co-op in the community. Mm-hmm. So our work is, let's just get them the healthy foods, which is a right, which they deserve, which they should have access to, before we can go in and telling people to go vegan. Now, they know we're vegan. We serve them vegan food. We talk about veganism. So they know that's very much a part of what we do. But for someone like me who went vegetarian when I was really young, I couldn't stick with it because my family didn't have enough money, mm-hmm. you know? So we want people to learn about it, but also be able to make the changes, that's better for them and their health. And many community members want to be able to, they simply don't have access to the healthy foods to be able to.
Right. Can you tell us more about that? What do you hear from community members about these issues? I mean, we know that chronic disease is just off the charts in this country. I mean, I have it in my own family. I talk about this whenever we do shows like this. And a lot of it is directly connected to these issues, especially the cultural issues around meat and dairy. So, Lauren, what really stands out for you when you think about some of the conversations you have with community members in the places you work, like, is it Vallejo?
Vallejo, yeah.
Oh, Vallejo. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I think that we've done focus groups. We did 3 focus groups in San Jose on the issue, and we also did at least 5 focus groups in Vallejo on the issue. And the overwhelming issue preventing people from being able to access healthy foods was the cost. Mm-hmm. It wasn't even proximity. It was the cost. Which is why we strongly push for living income. We push for living income, whether it be, you know, state workers, city workers, federal workers, or workers at McDonald's, at Walmart, at any place that anybody works, because that is the biggest barrier for them, is they just can't afford it. It's too expensive. We also found that, which is not surprising for a lot of people who follow this issue, that many people who were immigrants ate healthier in their home countries than they did when they moved to the United States, mm-hmm. because the only food that's available to them is primarily in convenience stores and liquor stores. And what you have available there are things like tomato sauce instead of fresh tomatoes. And they want to be able to cook with fresh foods. So those are 2 of the main issues, others being that, you know, that they are getting the vast majority of their foods from convenience stores because there are not grocery stores in the communities or co-ops or places for people to grow their own food. So they are limited by what is available to them.
We have an email from a listener who says, I appreciate you talking about the realities for those of us who might not have access to this kind of food. It's easy to say to stop eating meat and dairy, but what about those of us who have a hard time with this? Would you like to add anything to that, Hope, before we go to break?
I just agree with everything Lauren said. It's critical. And I, you know, when I say that the global shift to plant-based diet, of course we're talking about those that can, those that have the access and the ease to do it. But it's a very complicated issue. Like you said, it's not, and like Lauren said so eloquently, it's not black and white. And people have to go at their pace and at their ability. And that's why a lot of our messaging is to reduce to eliminate as much as possible.
Hmm. Well, if you'd like to join us, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. If you are working to avoid or reduce meat and dairy, do you have access in your area to fresh fruits and vegetables? If what we're talking about today really speaks to you, we'd love to hear from you. What are your thoughts about these issues? And any other questions about what it will take to shift diet at a time when we are in such a crisis? Today, we're joined by Hope Bohanic, Executive Director of Compassionate Living and author of the new book, The Humane Hoax, Essays Exposing the Myth of Happy Meat, Humane Dairy, and Ethical Eggs. She also hosts the Hope for the Animals podcast. Lauren Onelis is founder of the Food Empowerment Project. They encourage healthy food choices that reflect a more compassionate society by spotlighting the abuse of animals on farms and unfair working conditions for produce workers. Hope and Lauren will be speaking at the Compassionate Eating Conference at the Marin Humane Auditorium in Novato in Northern California on June 1st at 1 p.m. You can find information at yourcallradio.org. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. This week, we're doing a number of climate-related shows. Yesterday, we spoke with Rebecca Cormos about her book, Intertwined, Women, Nature, and Climate Justice. She talked about how women are disproportionately impacted by the climate crisis, and empowering women is one of the most important solutions. Tomorrow, we will discuss extreme heat, the number one weather-related cause of deaths in the U.S. Few protections exist at all levels of government for those who work outside, including farm workers. The Republican governors of Florida and Texas signed laws to prevent their own cities from taking action to regulate heat exposure. So how are workers supposed to protect themselves? If you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can email yourcall@kalw.org. And if you'd like to join today's conversation about some of the biggest steps we can take around the climate crisis. A report published in Science in 2018 says avoiding meat and dairy is the single biggest way to reduce your impact on the earth. So if you have any questions or comments about this, any questions or comments for our guests, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Hope Bohanic is Executive Director of Compassionate Living. Lauren Onelis is founder of the Food Empowerment Project, and they'll both be speaking on June 1st at 1 p.m. at the Compassionate Eating Conference at the Marin Humane Auditorium in Novato, California. Can we talk about just also how the treatment of animals has changed over the years? According to estimates, about 80 billion land animals are now slaughtered for food. 80 billion. You both have been working on this for many, many years. So Hope, what do you think people need to know? You talked earlier about how farming has really changed. Just what about the treatment of animals at such large scales? What really stands out for you?
Well, what's interesting is that farming hasn't changed that much over the last few decades. It's getting more intensive with more animals involved. But what has changed is the marketing and the labeling and the perception of animal agriculture. People are seeing these labels like cage-free and free-range and organic, and thinking that there is improvement happening in the industry when really that is questionable. There's a lot of humane washing and greenwashing happening with the labeling on websites, with the marketing, and that's more what is changing. The only thing that's really changing in the industry itself is that there's now more animals, more commodification, more condensing and confining of animals. So, you know, so there's a little bit of contradiction there. But what I have talked about in my Humane Hooks project, and I've have two books on the subject of humane washing and greenwashing, and the latest one being the Humane Hoax, basically to produce a profitable product, the well-being of the animal is going to be compromised in some fundamental ways. We have these inherent cruelties, these practices that are universal to making a product, an animal product, and a profitable animal product, things like body mutilations and separation of families and slaughter at a very young age. These things don't really change no matter the label, no matter the size of the farm, no matter what, you know, the marketing is saying. And, you know, consumers are very unaware of all these things. And when they see these labels, they're thinking that there's improvements happening and that animals are now living, you know, a stress-free life or, having a better life with a label like cage-free or free range. But there are dozens now, perhaps hundreds of undercover investigations of animal facilities that are documenting in video form just the unbelievable horrors that these animals face. And it's not just the size of their confinement. There's so many terrible things that they face from the beginning of their short lives to the end. And these videos are very painful to watch. And these labels give the consumers a false sense of the reality of the situation of commodifying and killing animals. You can't demand humane treatment and still commodify and kill animals that are sentient, that have families, that have personalities, that deserve to live free of human imposed suffering. The first chapter of my book actually is called A Pig Called Silver. And it's a wonderful story of a woman, Ingrid Taylor. She is a wonderful writer who was raised on a small scale pig farm. Her father had a pig farm. And she has this wonderful story of a little runt pig named Silver who they brought into their home and raised. And I don't want to give away the story, but it shows that even in these supposedly more humane situations or small scale or family farmed, all these labels, that again, there are these inherent cruelties that just can't be avoided. There's some wonderful stories throughout the book that really show the lives, the true lives of these animals behind the labels and what they endure.
And in your book, The Humane Hoax, you write, "I've done extensive research on these issues, interviewed numerous stakeholders, and personally visited multiple animal operations, and have concluded that these unregulated labels mean very little, if anything at all, for the animal's experience." Can you talk more about this? Because I'm guessing that a lot of people believe these labels are regulated.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that they are poorly regulated, woefully regulated, if at all. And most are just the farmer's, you know, word. They'll fill out a form, send it into the regulating body like the FDA or the USDA. And, you know, there's no on-site inspection. They're just awarded these labels. Now, the one label that does have some extensive regulation and on-site inspection is the organic label. And I certainly do appreciate that. And I appreciate organic food with plant foods and the concern for the environmental impact. But when it comes to the treatment of animals, unfortunately, there's very little that is helpful for the animals in the organic label. And I'll give an example, organic dairy. Many people buy organic dairy thinking that the treatment of the animals is going to be better. But unfortunately, there's a situation with the antibiotics and other pharmaceuticals. So when animals are in these intensive confinement situations, like on organic dairy, they get infections, they get sick. There is an infection of the udder called mastitis, which can be very painful. It's very common in conventional dairy. The udder can swell, there can be open sores, be very painful for the cows to be milked if they have a case of mastitis. And in regular, you know, conventional dairy, they will give these cows antibiotics, pharmaceuticals to clear up these infections. But with organic dairy, it's against the regulations to use pharmaceuticals, to use these antibiotics. And I had a large animal vet confide in me when I was researching for one of my books. He said that he saw cows in some of the most extensive pain at milking, with some of the worst cases of mastitis, on organic dairy farms because they were unable to give them, or would not give them the antibiotics and pharmaceuticals they need, because then they'd have to take her out of production. They couldn't sell her milk. And so the cows would go untreated and be in severe pain at milking. So in some instances, it can be even worse. It's interesting, because I went into this work of researching for these labels and this humane hoax thinking that I would say things like, well, you know, organic's better, but going vegan's best, or free range, it's a little better, going vegan's best. Unfortunately, that's not what I found. I found in some instances, like this organic dairy example, it can be even worse for the animals. So, you know, it's a horrible situation. And truly, the only humane choice is vegan.
Lauren, what would you like to add at the Food Empowerment Project? I mean, when you look at the issues, you've got animals on land, animals of the sea. I mean, you and your team have done so much work on everything from farmed fish and shark finning to the humane myths that Hope's talking about, pigs, rabbits, sheep, goats, turkeys. I mean, we can spend so much time on each of these. But what are your thoughts about what people should know based on the research that you've all done?
Well, as my rabbit hops around my apartment right now, you know, who he was found on the street in downtown San Jose, and he's the type, he's a white rabbit with red eyes, right? So he's the type that you see raised for food and used in experiments for cosmetic testing. I think the basic thing is that it's, for many of us, and not all, but for many of us, it's simply about not wanting to cause harm. Mm-hmm. There's no nefarious, you know, thing going on here. We simply don't want suffering to exist, and we don't want it to exist at our hands if we can prevent it.
Yeah.
So people want to have this like weird notion about what this is about. It's, for many of us, it's about caring. It's about compassion, like animals or not. You know, I love animals, and so I don't want to cause them suffering. I don't see some animals different than others. I don't see that fish in the ocean different than my rabbit. Well, in some ways, one's more cuddly. But in terms of their ability to feel pain and to suffer and to have relationships, you know, it is the same. And I think that people want to read more into that. And for me, it's just very simply, there's so much suffering going on in this world right now. And if I can do something and do my part to eliminate some of that suffering, why wouldn't I do it? So I feel like it's as simple as that. Now, we can make it complicated, but the complication things are all positives. Gee, it's better for the environment. It's better for my health. It's better, you know, there's so many positives to it. And that's what I find so, you know, I celebrated over 35 years of veganism this year. I went vegan in 1988, you know, that somehow people want to make it more than it is. And all the other things they want to make out of it are all positive. Because that's all that exists, is eliminating suffering And when you eliminate that suffering, it's better for the planet, it's for your health. Or if you eliminated it because you didn't want to cause harm to the planet, you're helping non-human animals, you're helping your health, you're helping reduce suffering. And so when you look at all of these issues connected, there's only positives that come out of it. The injustice comes from when people don't have the right to also access that, to also be able to eat without causing suffering to non-human animals, who also don't have the ability to eat in a way that doesn't harm the planet, eat in a way that doesn't harm their own health. That's the injustice. Other than that, everything that comes out of this is positive.
Hmm. Well, huge congratulations on 35 years. That is Lauren Onelis, founder of the Food Empowerment Project. They seek to create a more just and sustainable world by recognizing the power of one's food choices. They do so much incredible work, including focusing on the unavailability of healthy foods in low-income areas. Be sure to check out their school supply drive for the children of farm workers in Central California. It's at yourcallradio.org. Hope Bohannock is Executive Director of Compassionate Living. They work to end farmed animal suffering. Hope's new book is The Humane Hoax, Essays Exposing the Myth of Happy Meat, Humane Dairy, and Ethical Eggs. She also hosts the Hope for the Animals podcast. Hope and Lauren will be speaking at the Compassionate Eating Conference at the Marin Humane Auditorium in Novato on June 1st at 1 p.m. You can find information at yourcallradio.org. All right, now we're getting a flood of callers and emails. So let's hear from a few callers. Let's go to Peter in Florida. Hi, Peter. Welcome to the show.
You know, I was doing the math because your previous person, I was like, I've been a vegan, I say, you know, more than 32 years, and I hardly can find anyone. And now she was just talking. It's like, I know you're... Did you read the John Robbins book, Diet for a New America?
I actually saw him. I actually got into animal rights in 1987, and I went to the National Animal Rights Conference in 1988, and that is where I met John Robbins. And yeah, his book was so popular at the time.
That, right. That, you know, and anyone reads that book said, how could anyone be a vegan the next day after reading that book? And here we are 30 whatever years later, and people are still wringing their hands. Anyway, the dairy thing, I'm reading a book now. It's called The Cheese Trap. And it'll really open your eyes, because cheese is actually more torturous to animals. I mean, look, if you don't want to hear this, leave the room. But just do the basic math. A cow will live 20 to 30 years. How long can you get the milk from a cow? Like, so maybe, well, it's 5 years old. It's like, what do you think the cow keeps the, you think they keep the cow as a pet in the backyard for another 15 years? It doesn't happen. In other words, dairy, don't fool yourself. Dairy is a pit stop on the way to the slaughterhouse.
Well, thank you for that, Peter. This is The Cheese Trap by Dr. Neil Barnard. We've had him on the show with the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. We have another question about dairy. Let's go to Adrian in Alameda. Hi, Adrian.
Hi. I wanted to make 2 points. One was just about the mastitis that was mentioned earlier, and just to dispel sort of any confusion about that issue. Like, mastitis, the appropriate thing is to continue feeding through it. That's true for humans as well. It helps to clear the infection. So while there are many cruel aspects to industrial farming and dairy, etc., I don't want people to get hung up on that aspect, because that could weaken the argument overall. The other point that I think is more important for people to be considering, because it's about policy and about how our economy gets centered on meat and on processed foods, is the Farm Bill, which comes up every 5 years, and it heavily subsidizes industrial farming, including, you know, corn and soy that are added to all kinds of processed foods, as well as used as feed for industrial farming and ranching. So if people really could educate themselves on this and then advocate with their elected officials about changing the way that we allocate funding and subsidies,
so that healthier foods can be affordable instead of making the unhealthy foods the cheapest ones.
This is great. Thank you so much, Adrienne. We're definitely going to do shows about the Farm Bill. The Union of Concerned Scientists just put out a press release recently about how agribusiness interests are spending huge amounts of money, $523 million, lobbying Congress over the past 5 years. The Union of Concerned Scientists, Karen Perry Stillerman, said this is an industry that regularly spends more money lobbying Congress than big oil or military weapons companies. The Food and Farm Bill has the power to transform our food and farm system, and agribusiness and the industry groups know this. They started lobbying from almost the moment the last Farm Bill was enacted. So we'll definitely do shows about this. Hope or Lauren, do you have any thoughts on the Farm Bill and how it affects access to fresh fruits and vegetables?
Lauren, why don't you take that one?
I don't have a lot to say about it because we are a very small organization, and the Farm Bill is big and complicated, and it is very much the Beltway. It's very much DC. So we don't work too much about it, but on it. But yeah, absolutely, that definitely contributes it to it. And this is why it's so important for people to, you know, it's one thing people say, you know, you vote by what you eat, but it's more importantly that we speak up and we use our voices, our collective voices. But it's important for us to speak out to our policymakers about these issues and say what it is that we do want to see, because there's a lot of important issues wrapped up in that Farm Bill. And we need to hold our members of Congress accountable for how they vote on these.
Right. Yeah, Go ahead, Hope.
Yeah, I'll just say that it is such a critical issue. So much money is wrapped up in the Farm Bill and goes to animal agriculture, a huge amount. And right now, there are some wonderful lobbying groups, kind of vegan-based lobbying groups. One, I believe, is called the Agriculture Awareness Alliance, something like that. It's not coming to me, but they're actually hiring lobbyists to go in and to explain to the lawmakers that, you know, we should not be putting more money into this dying industry that is causing so much destruction and contributing to the climate change. You know, and so trying to get the money allocated more towards plant foods and plant farmers is critical. And so, you know, that's good work to look into, good things to support the organizations that are doing that work.
Well, thank you, Adrienne. We'll definitely do shows about the Farm Bill. We've got a couple emails, one from Wayne. I'm not opposed, but even when access is available, it requires a lot of attention and discipline to get enough protein to sustain muscle mass and brain health when switching to vegan, especially for young kids or older adults. I've tried a couple of times, and the level of fatigue that came after a few months was unsustainable, and I needed to have some animal protein to get back on track. This comes up a lot. Lauren, do you want to take this one?
Yeah, my organization isn't really health-based, but I do, you know, we do look at things like colonization in the dairy industry. With something like this, I would say that I don't know at what point in time you tried. A lot of time when I hear people say things like this, I find out that they tried to go vegan a long time ago, and maybe they weren't eating you know, a lot of times people will sometimes just remove the animal products and not replace it with something. So they're simply just not getting enough calories. Mm. So I would think that, you know, Kaiser is a great location. If you have Kaiser, they definitely will help you along the way. But I think some of it requires meal planning and making sure that you're not just removing the animal product and not replacing it with some other type of plant protein. And you may need to eat more. I mean, that's part of it as well, is that eating more plant foods is actually better for your health as well.
Well, thank you for that, Wayne. We're going to bring on some cookbook authors in the coming months to talk more about this. A couple other questions just quickly. We're almost out of time. Alan says, it'd be helpful if people could be vegetarian a couple times a week if they can't do it full time. Maybe when people find they don't need to eat meat with every meal, they'll be more inclined to eat more vegetables. And then Sufi says, Thank you for the amazing show. Where can we find a list of companies that are greenwashing, the list of companies that are practicing cruel and inhuman treatment? Hope, is there a list online? Do you have something like that?
No, don't have really a list. It's just when you see these labels, you know, like grass-fed or sustainable, things like that, you know, you need to look more deeply into it. A lot of these labels are greenwashing. So, you know, just the list is on the grocery store shelves. It's the labels.
Yeah, right. And Sufi says, the show is inspirational for all of us who care about animals. I feel sad that the labeling is not reflective of the realities of these animals. Well, thank you for that, Sufi. And we'll have to have you back, Hope, with some of the authors in the book to dive a little deeper into these labels.
It's
so important. And we've got about 2 minutes left. Final thoughts from both of you, given that we are really in an emergency right now with the climate crisis. I mean, here's a couple headlines. A Mexico heat wave melts temperature records in 10 cities. It is so hot in some parts of Mexico that monkeys are dropping dead from the trees. The brutal heat wave is linked to mass death. And then there was a brutal heat swells across Texas. People are without power in Houston. I mean, it's just, the list is so long. So final thoughts about the connections between these issues and what we're all eating, Hope.
Well, I'll just say that, you know, even though this is all very dire and concerning, I think that this progression into these humane labels and sustainable labels is actually, it's kind of a positive progression, because why are people reaching for these labels? It's because they care, right? They don't want to see animals suffer. They want to help with the climate crisis. So that's great. That is a good progression. But we have to get this information out there that, you know, that these marketers are lying to them, and that these, that animal products are not sustainable and not going to help the situation. And we also can't trust animal producers to reform their own businesses, right? Just like we can't trust the fossil fuel industry to reform their own business or do the right thing and stop drilling for oil. Self-regulation doesn't really work. We have to make the changes and the decisions as consumers on a grassroots level. And we really have to embrace the urgency, as you said, and realize that we can't just reform these industries out of destructive behavior. These industries are unreformable. They need to be dismantled and replaced with healthy plant-based foods. And, you know, we're not against farmers. That's another thing that we're often accused of, is that we are agitating with farmers. Vegans eat a lot of food. We love farmers. We love to eat food. We just want to see farmers and ranchers and suppliers and marketers change to plant farming, to put their focus on plant farming for this. You know, it's critical and necessary to our survival. So we just need to be a voice for truth and tell the animals' stories and show that anytime animals are commodified, there's exploitation, there's abuse, there's suffering, no matter the label. And I believe that we will come to a day where, you know, we're going to get through these issues. But I believe that care and concern and love and compassion will win. Thank you
so much. Hope Bohanek and Lauren Onelis will be speaking at the Compassionate Eating Conference. Find more information, yourcallradio.org, June 1st. Thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call.
Hi, I'm Sarah Mises-Tam from Mid-Pacific, a series from CAP Radio that explores what it means to be Asian American and the feeling of being caught between two worlds. We're excited to share episodes about how food, politics, and family influence our ideas of identity. Tune in to listen all this week on Bay Made at 11:30 a.m. right here on 91.7 FM KALW, San Francisco Bay Area.
Hey, this is One Way Possible, your sonic scavenger. It's Tuesday, and tonight I will be with you from 8 to 10 p.m. So join me and catch a vibe right here on KALW 91.7 FM and KALW.org.
11 o'clock.
Zolé, Zola, Zolé, Zola, 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 Zolé.
A local musician from Rwanda recalls his journey with music and his special love for drums.
Drumming is like fire. The more you do it, like there's like a fire burning in your body.
We'll meet Gatore Mukrahinda. Then filmmaker Benjamin Mulholland talks about his latest movie and diversity in the horror genre.
And I just decided that I was like, oh, we should just do Lake Mart Monster, but Goonies, but with people of color.
And San Francisco author Mary Ladd reads from her new book, Beats, Movies, and Literature. Stay tuned. Cross Currents is next. First, this news.